UFOs, are they aliens, government secret projects, the imaginings of disturbed individuals, or just outright hoaxes? We're here to find out. Welcome to Jim Harold's UFO Encounters. Welcome to UFO Encounters. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again. And I think we're going to have a fascinating discussion today because this is something I have long kind of wondered about. I, in my teenage years, I learned quite a bit about the Bible, and although I've probably forgotten quite a bit of it, but, was pretty deep into the Bible for a few years there. And I've always wondered about this question of UFOs in the Bible. And luckily for us, so has our author, but he did something about it. I'm talking about Ken Goudsward, and he is the author of the book UFOs in the Bible. And Ken is a best-selling author, an independent researcher whose interests include archaeology, ontography, epistemology, thaumaturgy, and hermeneutics. He writes in a variety of genres, including nonfiction, science fiction, dark comedy, and poetry, and we are so glad to have him with us today. Ken, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jim. It's great to be here.
So let me ask you, before you started this project, I guess I would ask a little bit, not to pry too much, but a little bit about your faith tradition, if you had one or not, and also kind of your viewpoint on UFOs.
For sure. So I was born in a Christian home, raised, went to church every Sunday, was also, my family is very big into volunteerism, so I was very involved in all kinds of aspects of church life for about 50 years, and including 2 years of Bible college and Sunday school teaching. I was a deacon for 3 years and a worship pastor, not a worship pastor, but a worship leader for many years with music and sound and all that kind of stuff. So I would say I was very much involved in the church, and it's hard to give you an idea of the exact style of church it was, because in Canada, where I am, our denominations are a little bit different from what you guys have down there.
Sure.
Basically evangelical, I wouldn't say fundamentalist necessarily, but sort of leaning towards that, I guess.
Not totally dissimilar in the sense of same kind of denomination, maybe a little more fundamentalist, but certainly a lot less years. So I know a lot less about the Bible than you do. Probably more than the average person, but a lot less than you do. So kind of, you know where I'm coming from.
Well, fair enough.
And UFOs, your thoughts on UFOs before you started this particular project?
Yeah, so I'm a science guy. I have a computer science degree. I've done computer engineering and software engineering, and I'm currently employed in the technology industry. So to me, the science is always fascinating, and honestly, I can't live without it. So that's sort of the basis of my approach, is that whatever I'm writing tends to be rather evidence-based. And so with the UFO phenomenon, it's tough because there's tons of evidence, but there's also a huge faith component to it, because first of all, do you trust the people who are talking? And you know, which side do you trust? Because there's almost just as much evidence that a thing happened or didn't happen. I think it's very fascinating, actually. It says a lot about the human condition or human nature or something, if somebody sees something, all of a sudden everybody else has an opinion on it, although they weren't there and they didn't see it. So right. To me, that really, really makes it difficult to get any kind of sense of what's really going on. I've always found that UFOs are a fascinating topic. And now that we're really a lot more connected than we have been, certainly 30 years ago. I think it's really changed the way that we can process information. And maybe we're not necessarily utilizing that to the best we can, but things like Facebook groups, where you can get involved, get into conversations with I'm going to use air quotes here, like-minded people, because it's funny, even in these kind of niche groups where you think, oh, everyone here is like, let's say there's like a UFOs in Canada group, you would assume that everyone there is a believer of UFOs, but it's not the case, because you, even there, you'll have, it's an open forum for people to tell about their experiences. And yet, the first thing you see after the post is always, oh, it's a weather balloon.
Like, right.
Come on. What is the point of this thing? Why are you here? So it's a problematic question. And how do you dig through the dust and the chaff in terms of getting to what's real? And you really can't unless you've either seen it yourself or you absolutely 100% know you can believe this person who's talking. And so over the last 5 years, I guess, my position has changed a little bit due to both of those factors, because a very good friend of mine to whom I definitely trust with my life, saw a UFO, and I have had the opportunity to talk to him about that and what that experience was like. And I've met other people who I don't know as well, but who seem credible. And there's all these stories. So to me, that I'm starting to lean towards believing whatever anybody tells me, what they saw, because I mean, they're the expert, right? If I see something, I'm the expert on that, of what I saw. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that what I think I saw is what I saw.
Right.
But right. So there's still all this unknownness.
More of a kind of a default towards belief rather than disbelief. And the other thing for me is this, is that just by sheer numbers, I mean, I think there are a lot of people who report, and I cover the whole realm of what we would term the paranormal, and I kind of put the UFOs, put UFOs into that. I believe there are a lot of people who are good, well-intentioned, good people, credible people who are mistaken. So I think some cases are mistaken. Of course, unfortunately, you've got the hoaxers and those kind of people. But I think that there is kind of this Venn diagram of people who are good people, truthful people, credible people, smart people who have seen something that cannot be explained by logical.
Exactly.
That's where, so in other words, not necessarily every reported UFO or little green men or whatever it is, because I don't even know if that's, you know, going back to the Kiel thing, I don't even know if that's the case. But the point being that there's a certain percentage, I believe, they did see something, and it's not a military aircraft. Sometimes it is, but a lot of times it's not. So, very interesting. More of a default towards at least listening to the person rather than just saying, oh, it can't be. And that's the thing that always, and no pun intended, we're speaking from the same hymnal. That is the thing that really has annoyed me about the hardcore debunkers. Not that they object to a single case based on its merits or the information reported, but that immediately they can hear two sentences about a case and immediately say, it's a weather balloon, it's swamp gas, it's whatever it might be. That's not even listening. That's just saying, well, it's not true.
Exactly.
Now, let me ask you this before we get in down to brass tacks with specific examples. Was this a tough thing for you to do? Because I know even in my, you know, I am of the Christian faith, but I'm probably not what a lot of people would consider a, quote, good Christian. But I'm still of the Christian faith. I still, believe in Jesus Christ and the tenets that go along with that. I still believe, despite all of the interviews I've done so forth over the years, but I also believe there's room for other things like possibly aliens or other dimensions or those kind of things. So it's kind of an odd Christianity, but that's kind of where I'm at. But sometimes I struggle with certain topics, covering certain topics that they might be against the faith and things. Now, I typically push through that because the shows are not about my beliefs. They're about this wide range of phenomena and people's beliefs about them. So I tend to, you know, put my personal thoughts aside and say, we're going to cover this topic and talk to somebody about it. Did you have that struggle going into this, that somehow this investigation would be harmful to the faith or your faith or whatever it might be?
Well, absolutely. Yes and no. So I would say that absolutely that would have been the case had it not been for some other similar instances that that already had taken me through that process.
Right.
So, I mean, we don't have a lot of time, so I could probably talk for 2 hours just about that question. So maybe what I'll say is, I guess when you begin to read, the Bible with what the Bible actually says, you start to come up against this cognitive dissonance between what the Bible literally says, and not even necessarily literally, but what the Bible says, even when it is using metaphors, there's this big gap between what the Bible says and what we've always been told that the Bible says. And they are not compatible. So absolutely, when you start looking into these types of things, and it's not just about UFOs. I'll just briefly say that you can get into the same problems whether you're talking about hell or angels or Satan or a lot of these things, and even salvation and the concept of the Messiah. There's all this stuff that we are essentially taught. This is from the Bible, and this is what God told us. And it's just not true. A lot of that stuff is not even in the Bible at all. And some of it is in there, but with a very different slant or with a very different truth, I guess, if you're going to call the Bible the truth. The truth that we're presenting is very different from the truth that's there.
Now, let's talk about examples. When you look at the Christian Bible from the Old Testament to the New Testament, how early do the references to potential, what we would call UFOs, start?
Yeah, so it depends. So again, we get into this sort of, because UFO sightings are sort of a gray area, and a lot of times you have very little data, but sometimes you have really great data. So I guess the answer to that question would be it's very clear in the book of Exodus. There's tons of data. There's like, this is obviously a UFO experience. However, before Exodus, in the book of Genesis, there's 5 or 6 examples that are not super clear, but kind of obvious. Or on the scale to, well, actually, there's no data given here at all. And in fact, in some of the cases, the story itself is skipped, and we're just told that, oh, yeah, something happened. And a good example for that is Abraham. So the Bible says that Abraham was called by God to leave Ur of the Chaldees and go to the land of Canaan, right? That's what we're told. Mm-hmm. No, the Bible doesn't say that. What the Bible says is, there's this one just really brief reference to an event that already happened earlier that's not in the narrative. And what it says is, so basically, I'll paraphrase slightly because I don't remember the exact quote, but it's something like this. Yahweh had called Abraham out from the land. Had called already, right? Mm-hmm. And So we don't know what that looked like. So there's actually a lot of circumstantial evidence that that was probably also looked a lot like a UFO. But the story is not told in the Bible. So we don't know. Is that story written down somewhere? Maybe, like, you know, all these documents that were that we keep finding that are thousands of years old, like in the Dead Sea Scrolls and several other cases like that, where we're finding these ancient stories that we've never seen before, and also copies of the stories that we do know. So to me, I think there's a very high likelihood that somewhere out there, there's a scroll with the story of Abraham's UFO encounter, but we don't have that. And it's not in the Bible. But if you look at all the circumstantial evidence and that I kind of go through in the book, I go through about 40 different examples. And then some of them, in retrospect, after you've seen all that, you can kind of start to see patterns emerge. And maybe those also apply to other Bible characters such as Enoch and even all the way back to Adam, but it's not clear. So I would say that most likely the entire Bible is a UFO story, starting from the very first verse, but it's not clear.
Do you think that not only that some of the sightings in the sky and visions and so forth, but the supernatural things that happened in the Bible could be attributed to UFOs? For example, if I'm remembering correctly, and it's been a while, Saul's conversion and to Paul, yeah, and the light and so forth on the road to Damascus, if I remember correctly.
For sure, that's absolutely correct. Yeah,
tell us about that. Is that one of these cases? And what does that mean to the faith? Does that mean, in your view, what does that mean to the faith? Does that mean that there wasn't really a conversion? Was there just some light and possibly an alien or something, or what does
Paul
it mean?
Paul is a difficult case because even if Paul didn't have a UFO experience, which he did, and I do talk about that in the book, it is pretty clear to me that Paul's conversion on Damascus was a UFO, and I do go into detail on that, but Paul is a strange case because if you look at everything that Paul did, and then you look at everything that that occurred before Paul, there's almost no, it doesn't flow through. You have the Old Testament, you have all these traditions. So you have the patriarchs, you have the prophets, and then you have Jesus, who is remarkably different from the Old Testament in terms of his message and his actions, because Jesus was an itinerant healer. He was certainly not a preacher and not a prophet. Jesus never prophesied about anything that was going to happen other than the fact that he said, "I'm going to come back later," which isn't a prophecy. It's just a promise. I can also tell you that I'm going to come back later. Doesn't mean I'm prophesying. But Jesus healed people. I've also healed people, and I've been healed myself. So there's something real about healing miracles. I don't necessarily know if those have anything to do with aliens. There's nothing that indicates that to me, but also maybe it's possible. I mean, aliens are real, and healing is real. So maybe they're connected, maybe they're not. But Paul didn't give a shit about healing. No, that's not true. Paul healed people, but Paul wasn't really into healing. He did use it. There's an example where he healed an entire island. So everyone on the island was healed. But Paul's main interest was teaching people and indoctrinating them into a specific way of thinking. and a specific belief system, which is almost diametrically opposed to what Jesus was doing. Jesus was interested in how people thought, and in kind of thinking in more healthy ways. But he never told people, hey, this is the way it is. And so that tends to be Paul's approach, is you guys got to believe this exact set of exact criteria and data. So Paul is problematic regardless. But the problem is Christianity relies about 99% on Paul, and the concepts of salvation are built entirely on Paul, not on Jesus. Jesus didn't talk about salvation. Jesus talked about the kingdom of heaven, and it's at hand. It's not some future thing that you need to get down on your knees and get into. No, it's a thing that's right here. He's talking about a sense of reality that we just need to grasp. And maybe that has something to do with aliens, because basically Jesus was like, there's something going on, guys, and you're not getting it.
Now, when you look at the Old Testament versus the New Testament, which one would you say is more rich in UFO references?
Definitely the Old.
And I guess, what do you think the implications of that are?
So I think that essentially Judaism is built on UFO experiences, whereas Christianity is built on the doctrines of Paul. But if you look at Moses, who is absolutely unquestionably the father of Judaism, even though Abraham is the father, literally. So all Jews are descended from Abraham, but also so are all Muslims. But all Jews adhere to the teachings of Moses. Now, Moses got his teachings directly from an alien on Mount Sinai. And the book of Exodus is all about that. The entire book of Exodus is all about that story, about what happened at Mount Sinai and with the information that was given to Moses from Yahweh on Mount Sinai. And that covers at least half of my book as well. As I go into a lot of detail. There's a lot of stuff in there about the experiences themselves that Moses experienced, and that were experienced by Moses's friends and family. And not only that, but the entire nation of Israel, when they were standing the first time God began to speak to them from Sinai, he spoke to the entire nation. And so there's I guess, some scholarly debate on how many people that was. It was a huge crowd. Estimates range between 10,000 and 5 million. So if there was 5 million people standing in a desert plain, how are 5 million people hearing the same thing? Or even if it's 10,000. I don't know if you've been to a stadium where they had a rock concert or something.
Sure.
The amount of sound equipment and amplifiers and speakers that you need to get 10,000 people to hear the same thing is a lot. There's a lot of technology involved.
Yep.
So was Yahweh using technology, or did he have some kind of psionic, ESP type of thing where he was projecting words right into people's minds telepathically? I don't know, but something was happening at Sinai that was not a simple, there's someone standing there talking and everyone can hear them. No, there's limits on in terms of auditory propagation. So it is also interesting how the crowd responded. So after listening for a few minutes, or we don't really know how long, but for a little while, the people just started freaking out, and they told Moses, look, we can't do this. We can't take it. You go listen and come tell us the message. So to me, that's strange. And it's, I don't know what that was. But put that into context. So before that happens, the same crowd of up to 5 million people, they didn't just suddenly hear a voice out of nowhere. No, they saw a huge object descending from through the atmosphere with tons of clouds and smoke and fire and lightning and flashing lights and thunderous sounds. And like they say that the ground shook, like the thing was huge and loud. So, I mean, it's fine. You can say, oh, well, that was God. Okay, sure. But there's also all these other parts of the description where it's like metallic and like gleaming bronze. And so what God, last time I checked, God wasn't made out of bronze. And usually when the Bible talks about, you know, gods that are made out of bronze, they're talking about idols that were made by human hands. So something strange is happening here.
Now, here's a question, and this one might upset some people, but I'll throw it out there. You know, when we look at different things from a different level of sophistication, we might refer to it in some way, in a different way. So if somebody from the 30s saw a television, although I know there was work in development, but the average person, they would call it a radio with pictures, maybe. We call it a television. Or maybe if, you know, someone from the 1900s saw an iPhone, they would call it a magic communicator, you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah, for sure. So well, I work in IT.
Right.
That's my entire life. Like,
so
and it's even worse because I mostly manage printer support. So like I'm not the hands-on guy, but I'm doing a lot of troubleshooting.
Yeah, so people are not exactly explaining things in the most accurate, detailed level. And my long-winded way of saying God, people would know the concept early on of God and gods and understand the concept of a deity. They might not understand the concept of an alien. So do you think it's possible, and again, this may offend some people, and I may burn in hell for asking the question, but I'll ask it anyway, could God just simply be a very powerful alien?
Absolutely. And in fact, I think even the way that you couched that question is telling, because I personally think that, and this is based on evidence because I am a scientist, it seems to me that this, even the idea that the early people had a concept of God is actually I think we're projecting our concept of God back onto the ancient people.
Okay.
I don't think they actually thought about God that way. I think they knew that. I think they were more familiar with the concept of aliens and did not even have the concept of God that we do. And that's based on my readings of the Sumerian literatures, as well as other mythologies. And so when we read these ancient stories, we totally miss the point. And we're calling them gods, but they don't even have the word God. And they are talking about characters in a story that these characters are doing. And the things that they're doing are not godlike things. They are very human-like or animal-like or, you know, whatever, alien-like, in the way that people have their own agendas. People have their strengths and weaknesses. And these are the kinds of things that are always characteristic of the ancient myths and legends that have been passed down to us. They are never an omniscient, all-knowing, all-caring, all-loving God. That's not a concept that people even had, like even thought of, I don't think. Now, that, of course, that didn't come from nowhere. So that evolved gradually. And you begin to see traces of that concept. You can see some of the in some of the Egyptian culture, especially when you look at the evolution of Ra and Amun and the Atun. And so especially the around the concepts that that were really wrestled with through the around the period of King Tut, and specifically the two generations before Tut, where King Tut's immediate predecessor, or maybe it was two before him. Anyway, there's the pharaoh Akhenaten, and it's we basically the kind of the common knowledge is how we interpret is that Akhenaten changed the Egyptian culture to create monotheism, and so essentially before that there was no idea that there was one god. However, that I think that even that is oversimplification, because I don't think that we're still using our definition of God and our definition of monotheism, and it doesn't exactly jive with what Akhenaten was doing. So it's always more complicated. Nothing is simple, and we only see what we see from what we know, and what we know right now is based on a whole lot of assumptions that we don't even think about, aren't even aware that they're there.
Now, is there a vivid example that you could share with us that literally sounds almost like it's torn out of the pages of a MUFON report these days, one in the Bible that really just, this is definitely a UFO report?
That's a great question. If you look at Ezekiel and Isaiah, and you read, you have to read the entirety of those two books, which is going to be a drag because their message is very political and not really possible to understand, because they're talking about politics from 500 BC. Well, I don't know what was going on at 500 BC enough. Right. So if you can, you kind of have to skip those parts, because honestly, those aren't really important, but a lot of people get a lot of people take those as the important parts because these guys are seen as prophets. And so people interpret those stories as something that we need to know because it's going to affect our future, which may or may not be true. And I won't get into that, but So there's those parts of their books, but then framing those, there's the, okay, this is what I saw. So there's the, this is what the Lord told me parts. And then there's the part before that. And those are the interesting parts to me, because if you look at those parts, so Ezekiel 1, Ezekiel 10, and a couple of parts in Isaiah, which I can't remember which chapters, basically, when you read those chapters, they sound very different. You can't tell that they're talking about the same thing until you start to dig into some of the Hebrew words. And then which I do in my book, and I make the case that that all of these explanations and descriptions are sort of different perspectives over time and from two different people. About the same thing, because Ezekiel sees a thing that he writes down in great detail, but he has no clue what it is. So then a few years later, he sees it again, and he's like, oh, it's this thing again. And he adds a little bit of different detail because his perspective is a little bit different. But it's not until 10 years later or 15 years later, he has another encounter, and this time he is picked up and moved from Babylon to Jerusalem, which is like 1,000 miles or something like that. Like, it's a long way. And suddenly he's transported. So it doesn't say that he suddenly is there. It says, well, it is. It's like there's enough wiggle room in there that it could be like one of these tic-tac UFOs, or it could be teleportation. But he's very clear that he is transported 1,000 miles or hundreds of miles at least. And when he's describing what he sees in Jerusalem, things start to click for him, because in Jerusalem, he is told to walk into the temple, which is very strange, because in the temple in Jerusalem, you're not allowed to go in there unless you're a priest, which Ezekiel was not. He was not even part of the correct tribe and clan to be a priest. He was not eligible. And so, but he goes into this temple. Not only that, he goes into the Holy of Holies, which no one's allowed to go into except for one high priest, one day per year. And what's inside that Holy of Holies is the Ark of the Covenant and the cherubim. So now Ezekiel is able to see with his own eyes these objects that he's heard about and that he's been taught about and through his teachings in the Torah as he's been raised as a Jew. And so there's all these conceptual things that he's very aware of but has never seen. Because keep in mind, the Jews were not allowed to make drawings or pictures or engravings or statues or anything. One of the Ten Commandments. In fact, Christians are not allowed to either. So as I'm staring at my computer screen right now, and I see a picture of Jim Harold, and I see a picture of Ken Goodsword, I'm actually breaking one of the Ten Commandments. So it's kind of funny that we tend to just ignore certain parts of the Bible. But anyway, so here's Ezekiel, and he's standing in the temple, and he has just been transported there by a loud, noisy flying object with lights flashing and all this weird going on. And now he's able to put two and two together finally for his experiences over the last 20 years, because he's seen several of these UFOs, or he's seen the same UFO possibly several times. And suddenly he has this new bunch of new information, because he sees what's in the temple and he puts it all together. And when he does that, the way he writes it isn't super clear to us, because basically he's just, you know, writing his own journal. I think he's saying, holy, this is what happened, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think that necessarily he knew that he was going to need to make this obvious to explain the UFO phenomenon to us 2,500 years later. But nevertheless, he does give us that enough detail to do that if we know where to look. So based on those experiences and reading them as the same phenomenon, you really start to get a clear picture of what's happening. And so that is how I get to some of the conclusions that I get to, especially around the cherubim and some of the possible technological aspects of the Ark of the Covenant and things like that. So you just based on one encounter or one chapter, no, you can't tell. It's very strange, and this is part of the problem, because we're used to reading the Bible in very small chunks. Many years ago, I decided that, no, I'm not going to ever read one verse. I'm going to always read the chapter at least.
Because you miss the context.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, It's been an absolutely fascinating discussion. We could literally talk about hours for this, but I think that folks need to pick up the book, UFOs in the Bible, if they're interested in hearing Ken's thoughts on this. Very interesting indeed. Ken Goutswired has been our guest. Ken, where can people find the book and learn more about this fascinating topic?
Yeah, so it's on Amazon, and it's available to order through your local bookstore. They probably don't have it on the shelf, but they can order it in. It's also on my website, which is dimensionfold.com. If you go to ufo.dimensionfold.com, it'll take you right to it. Or just Google my name, Ken Goudswired. It's G-O-U-D-S-W-A-R-D, and I'm sure you'll find me on there. I have a few other projects as well, which may interest you. But I've got UFOs in the Bible. I've got magic in the Bible. I've got a commentary on the Sumerian Akkadian Enuma Elish, and I also have a couple of hilarious dark comedy novels and some sci-fi poetry.
Excellent, excellent. I hope everybody checks it out. The subject has been UFOs in the Bible. Ken, thank you for joining us today on the show.
Thanks a lot, Jim.
And thank you for tuning in. We appreciate it. And we'll talk to you next time. Until then, keep your eye to the sky. Bye-bye, everybody.